seventh kingdom of life.
The seventh kingdom.
The seventh kingdom.
The seventh kingdom.
The seventh kingdom.
The human side of technology.
A 10-minute cell phone video of a 68-year-old bus monitor being bullied by students went viral this week with almost 4 million views.
Oh my God, you're so bad.
I know.
And then that they would be have the gall to post that online. There's a breakdown there in public decorum, and we all need to take that very seriously.
Unless you have something nice to say, don't say anything about it.
360 exclusive tonight. Michael Brooch, whose identity was revealed last week by the website Gawker, agreed to sit down with CNN's Drew Griffin in his first television interview. For years, Brooch hid behind his online screen name, Violent Acres.
Back in the day, I created a Reddit called R Rape for rape jokes. I created one called
Rape Jokes.
Rape Jokes.
You know, when you think about what happened here two Mondays ago with the marathon, and you sort of thank goodness for all the cameras that were here, but could cameras have stopped the suspects if they had made it to New York? The people who run New York City are betting yes. They want more surveillance cameras.
So I'm going to give you a demonstration of the NYPD's domain awareness system, which is an application that was jointly developed by the police officers at the New York City Police Department and representatives from Microsoft. And when the officers here clicked on those alerts, open the alert up, and they clicked on the cross cue button, they were able to see really very quickly all the cameras within 500 feet of that location.
Here's what New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg said earlier this week.
We have to understand that in the world going forward, we're going to have more cameras and that kind of stuff. That's good in some senses, but it's different than what we are used to.
Hey, Jason.
Hello, Stan James.
Well, we're back for another episode of The Seventh Kingdom.
Yeah, thanks for joining me this week. We're kind of going to go a little bit more topical this week than some of our previous episodes. Right now, it is currently the week after, I think, a week and a day after the Boston Marathon bombing. And after the flurry of news reporting and just kind of suspense of last week, I just had this phrase pop in my head late last week that I thought we could do an episode about. That phrase being kind of humorous in its own right, but I think it's getting harder to be a dick, specifically because of, I guess to some extent, technology and how, well, in some regards, we obviously know technology can make it easier to be a dick, but then I think we're kind of swinging around to the other end where it's getting, it's making it more difficult. So we're going to talk about three specific cases today. The Boston Marathon bombing, the Reddit troll, Violent Acres, and Karen Klein, the bus monitor, which was a big story around June or so of last year.
So I don't think the Boston Marathon bombing needs a whole lot of explanation for people this fresh. But Jason, maybe you can paint the broad brushstrokes and how this can, you know, connects to our podcast about technology and human life.
Yeah, well, so as far as we know at this point, and it seems pretty definitive, it was, you know, executed by these two brothers who were like 19 and 26, who had immigrated into this country over 10 years ago and had been living in Cambridge. But long story short, they're pretty definitively sure they used two pressure cookers to create kind of homemade explosives, which, you know, we can only guess, but that's the type of, I guess, schematic and plan that can easily be found on the internet. So right off the bat, we see one of the possible downsides of technology that, yes, all this amazing information is able to proliferate, but there's also a lot of awful things that can proliferate in terms of, you know, when I was a kid and the internet was just coming online, I think the proto version of it was the Anarchist Cookbook, which was this thing that some friends just had and people kind of got access to, and it had stuff like this in it, like how to make pipe bombs and just, you know, do dangerous stuff with homemade equipment. So that's one downside we see is that, you know, because of the internet, they were able to build some bombs pretty easily. So the technological gap wasn't really there. But then the flip side, and kind of part of what I don't know, I guess made last week so fascinating was it was really one of America's first major terrorist-related attacks to happen in the age of social media. So as big as the narrative was, there was also this just fascination happening with what was happening on Twitter and how the FBI and the Boston Police Department were and were not using it to communicate to people what was going on. And just the simple fact that really what caught these guys in the end was a combination of just old school tips and technology, because they were in the middle of Boston, which is a pretty dense city. And there were security cameras everywhere. And at a marathon full of, I'm not sure how many people show up to that, but there were a lot of people that have smartphones these days that were taking photos, were taking videos, probably more so than any other event that's happened like this before. So, you know, the rough timeline is they pored over all the security cam footage, identified a couple people that they thought fit the profile. And then once they posted their info, one of the interesting things the FBI did was they crowdsourced some of the intelligence gathering. So they set up a tip line, said, hey, these are the dudes. And then they also created a website where people could upload their own social media photos. So if you had something you thought was evidence, you could just instantly transfer it to the FBI. And there were a number of photos that surfaced that once people had seen the photos of the suspects, they went to their phones, started looking through, and oh shit, look at that. There's the guy walking casually away from like the second explosion while everyone else around him is running. And he's just kind of sauntering. So I thought that was, you know, there's the whole other topic of what kind of happened on Reddit with trying to solve the crime and the kind of chaos that was. But just at its most simply, it really struck me that in this day and age where there's just cameras anywhere, like, it's, I don't know how you can think you could pull something like that off.
That's a common thread I've heard online, is that part of it is just these guys were stupid in a sense, that, you know, someone, a more sophisticated attacker would have taken some, at least, you know, basic steps to hide their identity and such. But I think even then, they would have caught them eventually, given, like, as you said, like, there's just, yeah, there's cameras on every corner. And, gosh, and you know what this means. You know, next year, there's going to be double the cameras and for any event of this nature. And so for someone to try to pull off something like this is going to get super hard.
Yeah, and it really kind of sums up, you know, this constant debate we have of, is the emerging, I guess, surveillance / Big Brother security state a good or bad thing? And in this instance, it's like, I'm super thankful there were all these cameras there. Like, I have no problem walking into a store and seeing it, you know, up in the corner.
I wonder how the percentages break down of how many of the images came from, say, official government cameras versus people's private cell phones taking pictures. And it sounds like a lot of the footage was also taken from private company cameras.
You know, they
had security cameras there. So I wonder if it really is an argument for the state to have cameras everywhere, or if the FBI is going to want like a backdoor to all of the stores' cameras. Yeah, I don't know, but I'm fascinated by the idea that evidence collecting via social media, that you would just, you know, do you have information about this case, upload it here? That's a whole new level of
know,
how easy it is for people to do that.
And call this tip line, and suddenly everybody knows about it. It is, I think it's, you know, in the Boston Police Department, like, they, I think, pretty brilliantly used their Twitter feed all of last week in a very intelligent and informative way, where they were clearly putting out brief but important updates and then asking for information when they needed it and kind of letting the public know what was happening. And I thought that was really kind of ingenious in a way that almost isn't really possible, because even with traditional media and the television, you know, 10 years ago, the Boston police commissioner might get 5 minutes once an hour.
Maybe. You have a press conference, right?
Yeah, in the traditional cycle, and they could show that clip. But this is a little different, where it's kind of bypassing that and, like, as we talk about, like, going straight to the people, so to speak. And I think that's – I think we're going to see a lot emerge in terms of how crime is fought, you know, over the next 5 to 10 years, and especially as these agencies get smarter about using it. I was reading some facts – about one sheriff who has like 10,000 Facebook fans for his page in his local community, and something was robbed, and he posted some basic information about what was stolen, and they found it, because suddenly it's like, oh, I know that person who knows that person who knows that person. Yeah. Or I can't think of the name right now, but I was pretty fascinated by some startup just started a website for basically taking the neighborhood watch online. So your neighborhood watch, you can go to this website and your local neighborhood can get on and you can start connecting and posting and sharing this type of information.
Sharing like security cameras, or what are you sharing? Or just like tips, or, hey, someone broke into my yard last night.
So, you know, like someone broke into my yard last night. He looked like this. The police are on the case. If you have any information, let me know. You know, and it's kind of that localized version of connecting, which I think is a big emergent we're about to see. Or even I was just walking down the street today and I saw, you know, the age-old lost my dog.
Right.
Sticking a photo on a lamppost and hoping someone sees it. Whereas I think even that's going to change soon, because now it's like you post a picture of the dog, and the more people in my local community that are connected, the more likely it is that it's going to be found.
Yeah. There was a case in Boulder just a couple of years ago. Actually, a friend of mine, Elaine Ellis, had her bike was stolen, and she tweeted about it with a picture of her bike. And I think it was within half an hour, someone tweeted back, hey, I saw a guy riding that bike on the street path. And within a couple hours, they had found the guy. But again, there, the key is she had a lot of followers on Twitter. So sort of leveraging your social reach there.
And that's where I think, you know, the more these traditional agencies and infrastructures we have start to plug in to this kind of new social media outlet, the more interesting it is. Like, I immediately, after last week, like, oh, I want to, you know, I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to find out if the LAPD has a Twitter account. Because, like, I actually want to know what's going on in my city.
Yeah, that's, I don't know if there's one in San Francisco. There probably is. That would be fascinating.
Like, it just as a way to stay kind of connected to the local pulse and know what's going on. And the more people that do that, the thing is, the network effect starts to take over. So the more powerful that agency can be, because they can work more on the executing part of things if, you know, they have eyes and ears everywhere.
Right. If they can just post a, this thing was stolen, or, hey, we're looking for the suspect.
And yeah,
they can,
you know.
They can push that out to thousands of people. That's
the old sketch of a face, totally.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anyway, that was just, I think this is going to be one of those moments that's unpacked for a long, long time, in terms of how social media was and was not involved, and just the level of exposure and up to the minuteness of it. Like, I don't know if we've had any other disaster where people were literally so glued to tweet by tweet.
Tweet by tweet.
Yeah, like, you know, as the information was coming in and the ability to even amplify these local things to kind of a national level. Like, there was a point last Thursday night where I found one of the websites that was streaming the local police scanner. So it was like you could listen in to, like, literally it happening in real time. And it was fascinating.
Well, since we're already talking about social media, that leads us into our sort of next example of dickness, which is not as serious as the Boston bombing, but still instructive, I think. And that is, so you might know of the website called Reddit, which is like a news site where users just, you know, post whatever stories they think are interesting, and other users vote the stories up and down, and you end up with this sort of crowdsourced news outlet. Although the news is often like pictures of cats and funny stories and things like that. And people can also create their own sort of sub areas So, you know, for people who are interested in politics or people interested in astronomy can have their own little news feeds, which is just background to this guy who a few years ago started creating lots of these little subreddits, but with really disgusting topics, really. Things like rape jokes, pictures of dead kids, and I mean, the most infamous was one called Jailbait, which was pictures of you know, teenage girls taken without their permission, and basically this guy was just, I think at the same time, just sort of being a dick to people in these forums and just being a jerk, and when people would ask him to take pictures down, he wouldn't do it, and all this just like really nasty stuff. And the big news, which Jason, I think, just told me about last week, was last year, the Gawker website figured out who he was and outed him, you know, posted his name and location and all that. And as a result, he lost his job and had to deal with all these people, you know, sort of the witch burner effect of people after him. And so, yeah. Trolling is the name on online for people doing this on web forums. And so, Jason, you've been online for a long time. I'm sure you experienced some of the very earliest forms of trolling. What's your first experience of someone being a dick in an online forum?
Oh, boy. I'd have to think back to, you know, it's probably just like video game forums.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't even tell you for what I would have been playing. Or just online in general. I mean, I definitely remember, you know, multiplayer Quake back in the day is, I think, where the action of teabagging was born, which is like, not only am I, did I just kill you, but like, I'm going to squat over your face to rub it in, like, how much better than you I am.
I did not know that word.
Yeah, so, I mean, which is a kind of a form of trolling to an extent. And, I mean, my God, just, you know, what really fascinated me about this story was, as we've been kind of talking about, is the relationship between the internet and being anonymous.
Right.
And how there's a light side to that in terms of it's very freeing for some people, and you can blog under a pseudonym, you can explore topics you've never thought of before, you can connect with people from a totally different subculture without worrying about it, you know, filtering back into your life. But then on the other side is when people are anonymous, there tends to be a dehumanizing effect in my experience, where it's much easier to objectify others. And,
yes,
you know, all you have to do is go to youtube.com, find any video right now, and in the comments you will see, like, just the train wreck.
It always degenerates to racism, homophobia,
yeah,
name-calling.
Like, it's just kind of the worst aspects of everything. Or, you know, for that matter, hopping on Xbox Live, you know, and playing a multiplayer game where you get to hear people, and it's just like, it can be quite depressing for me sometimes when I used to play Halo and go on and hear these teenage kids and just like, oh my God, like there's just no humanity there in terms of the online interaction.
Yeah.
What was that? Did you ever see Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back?
No, I don't think so.
There was one of the Kevin Smith movies where they found one of the guys that had been flaming them online, and they went to his house. Okay, it's pretty funny. Like how quickly the boy changes when someone's actually at his doorstep. Like,
but yeah, that's the thing. When it's, you're a whole different person when you're behind a keyboard and you think that no one knows who you are, then you can let loose with all of your most violent and, you know, homophobic, hateful, racist, xenophobic, misogynistic vitriol that you want. And you're like, ah, you know, whatever, it's just all good fun. But then when someone meets you in person, or in the case of this guy, you lose your job and suddenly all your coworkers and your boss know that you're the one who's been saying this filth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not going away. You know, not, he has, you know, kind of been branded at this point by our society. You know, anytime, I don't know what he does. He's going to have to change his name and like move somewhere new and hope, you know, no employer digs too deep to find out, oh, you're the guy that did that? Like,
or he'll have to employ the services of that woman in our other episode to scrub his name from Google and suppress all the bad news about him. But in this case, he's too famous. That's not going to work.
Yeah, I don't think you can overcome that. So it's this, you know, interesting moment where I feel like our digital trails are getting stronger and stronger. Like, it's much harder to hide from things that were and that you've done.
I was just thinking, Jason, it's almost kind of a balance happening, because it was the internet which allowed people like Violent Acres, or what's his real name again? Michael Bruch. It was the internet which gave him such a loud megahorn that he could shout his crap to so many people. You know, pre-internet, pre-Reddit, pre-the web, he could have thought some really awful things. Maybe he could have, you know, taken a Sharpie and written some really nasty messages on the local bathroom, but that would have been the extent of his reach, right? But
it took
something like Reddit to allow him to reach. What they say, Reddit has, 3 billion page views in a month. And so that gave him this loud platform that he could do it. And what's interesting is that now it seems that there's a little bit of pushback now, right? That it gives you this huge platform. But at the same time, there's a little bit of accountability coming back in.
I think there's definitely a move. I mean, even tying it back into the Boston Marathon bombings, you know, a big deal last week was, and one of the stories that I think is going to be talked about for a long time, was how a number of people on Reddit and this subreddit that blew up in terms of trying to solve the crime and identify the suspects, they got it wrong for a lot of people. And suddenly, these people whose lives were totally disconnected from this were getting flooded from all corners thinking that, you know, they were the suspect. And it was just this groupthink online that kind of spiraled out of control, which
now has a word I've learned. It's a witch hunt is the technical name now. It happens on Reddit and other sites where, you know, people online, some vigilantes, decide so-and-so is the bad guy, and they will, you know, flood that person's inbox, or sometimes, you know, mail them physically packages or walk by their house. And it's just awful, you know, with no court, with no official system, the internet just decides that you're a bad person. That is an awful, awful fate.
Oof. Yeah, that's pretty brutal. And I think one thing we've maybe seen is that it's good at dealing with quantifiable data, but not necessarily qualifiable data. Is that right?
Yeah. Right. Qualifiable, yeah. More touchy-feely.
Yeah, so it's like if you know, guessing how many beans are in the jar, you can ask 100 people, and those 100 people are going to be better than that one person. But asking people, you know, why are the beans in the jar isn't necessarily a better question to be asking, or how did the jar get there? You know, maybe not so good at that.
But speaking of online reputations being ruined, I think, Jason, maybe you can tell people about our final example of not someone being a dick, but in this case, it's the opposite. But
yeah, so it was around June of last year that this video hit YouTube of some kids. I think they were maybe middle school on a bus, and there was a woman on the bus who is the bus monitor. So she's not even the bus driver. She just kind of rides along on the bus to make sure everything's safe and fine and kids are getting where they need to go. Kind of, you know, a position a lot of older people kind of tend to take on. But so yeah, her name was Karen Klein, and she just got extraordinarily bullied one day. Like, this kind of witch hunt in the bus, I guess, to an extent, started to happen, where, you know, the kids start to escalate how mean they can be to her and how awful of things they can say. And somebody taped it and put it on YouTube. And as a result, actually, she got an outpouring of support from, like, all around the world. People were writing to her, like, sending her love and best wishes and how much these kids, you know, were going to get what was coming to them. And someone started an Indiegogo and they raised like $700,000 for her so she could retire. Southwest, like, flew her out to Disneyland, her and her family, so they could take a break. And like, you know, basically being like, that really sucks what these kids did to you. And I think it does as well. But then this other thing we've been talking about is, man, now what happens to these kids? Because this video is a meme. It's going to exist on the internet for the next ever, basically. And some of these kids are identifiable and are going to be known as the kids that were mean in this video. And that's going to follow them for the rest of their lives, even though, you know, it's not excusable, but when you're 11 to 12 years old, you know, morality's still kind of coming online. And
kids on my bus in middle school, I remember them at the very least teasing our bus monitor and taunting other kids. It happens.
Yeah, and they you know, I think they were pretty mean in this instance, and that's still not cool, but it's like, should they be punished for that for the rest of their lives? Because there's a very good chance that, you know, all it takes is one of these kids' friends gets mad at them or something and creates a website, you know, like, oh, this is Billy, and then that gets to the top of Google, and for the next 30 years, you know, Billy's known as the mean bus kid.
Right, and he starts a new job at age 30, and somehow, gets back, and suddenly all his coworkers are passing around the video and whispering, you know, oh, that's the kid. That's the kid right there.
Yeah, he's the dude that was that mean. And, you know, one thing I think we're wrestling with right now is, like, with such crystal clear digital identity, like, what are people allowed to make mistakes anymore in our culture moving forward? Because it's a different, it's just kind of a different dichotomy now when that video is just there, crystal clear, and can't be forgotten about. So, like, is it okay that when he was a kid, he was a dick, but, you know, 20 years from now, maybe he's 33 years old and just got out of medical school and, you know, and is an amazing doctor or something? Like, should he have to deal with that?
Yeah. It strikes me that the sort of the theme here is how technology, it shifts the scale of everything, right? That this, you know, Violent Acres guy wouldn't have been able to reach so many people without technology. And in this case, his video, I don't know, like, you know, in the past, maybe, like, word would have spread in the town that this had happened, or maybe someone would have made a written report, but you wouldn't have a video preserved in crystal digital quality, which could go viral, which is a whole new phenomenon only made possible by the web, that one, you know, 2 minutes of time could live forever on the internet as a YouTube video. And it seems like, yeah, we're just having to come to grips with this sort of new power that we have as humans to keep stuff around that long.
And just the power, you know, it just struck me thinking about all three of these cases to an extent, and even this idea of, which is a whole episode in itself, this anonymous group that we've been hearing so much about over the last couple of years, is like the internet in some ways allows it to be everybody against you.
Yeah.
So, like, you better hope you're on the right side of that, right?
That reminds me, some time ago, there was, I believe it was on Reddit, just to keep us on this theme, and the subject line was, like, world's biggest jerk, or here's someone that the internet really, you know, someone who really deserves what's coming to them. And you would click on the link, and they had it set up that basically if you were logged into Facebook, it just took you to your profile page. And it's like, here's this story, which is like the number one story on Reddit. And when you would click through to see, well, who's this awful person they're talking about? And it would go to your Facebook page. And I mean, I fell for it. Like, for about 30 seconds, I was like, oh my God, why does the internet, why are they after me? And then it took me a second to realize, like, oh, it goes to everyone's page. But it gave me, for those brief seconds, that terror of what it would feel like if the entire internet had decided that I was a bad person.
Yeah. And the unbelievable power that kind of crowdsourcing is putting in people's hands that takes some discernment and wielding, which I don't think has come online yet. So we're, you know, we are seeing a lot of missteps and people and causes and organizations being hurt as we, I think, as a society, try to learn what this means, you know, when we're all connected and can make these decisions, you know, like the geese flying, who's leading the flock, you know, when it's just all of us wired together, like, where does that kind of moral intelligence come from?
And I, it strikes me that it's evolving, that it is coming. You do get some etiquette now online, and in most online forums that I'm in, people are pretty strict at, you know, hey, don't post anyone's personal information here, because that was, you know, that was a trick they would, you know, pass. They would post someone's phone number or something. And for that matter, even just the vocabulary evolving. You know, this user is a troll. That just putting a word to it makes it somehow, you know, as a subculture, like we know how to react to those type of people.
Yeah, and I think there's more. I think we are seeing an emergence of persistence on the internet of your identity, and there is this subtle but, you know, happening shift to push people away from being anonymous, which comes with it, I think, some accountability. You know, there's some danger, obviously.
Right.
But, you know, every time I log into YouTube now, it's there it is asking me, like, hey, we really think you should use your real name. You know, you can say no right now and continue just using your username. But, you know, at what point do they decide that's just not going to happen anymore? And it's like, oh, if you want to comment on YouTube, like, your comment is going to be there forever. There's your mug. There's your name. There's what you said. You know, that's not going anywhere.
I think we've talked about this before, but I started using the internet, like back in the early 90s, some of the early Usenet groups. And it terrifies me that these posts written by a teenaged me live on forever. And no, I'm not going to tell you what my username or what forums these were in, because it haunts me that someone might find this and, yeah, reveal it to a future employer or partner of mine. So, yeah, we're going to have to get used to this. So what are any closing thoughts on being a dick on the internet today?
You know, be careful. I really think is the thing. Be careful. You know, even I sometimes forget, you know, the stuff I'm putting out there, it stays, it sticks, it's not going anywhere. So be mindful of what, you know, this identity you're creating online.
Well, and offline, in the Boston Bombers case, you know, even if you're just walking down the street, I mean, not that you would be a dick on the street, but if you're thinking of shoplifting or stealing a purse or something, God, how many cameras are around you at any given minute on the street these days?
And that's just
one to one.
Yeah, and it's just going to be increasing. So, you know, I guess if anything, it's just like get used to it. Just absolutely get used to it. And like I said, I think it's getting much harder to be a dick. So be nice, everybody.
That's our message to you from the Seventh Kingdom on this episode.
All right, thanks for chatting, Stan.
Until next time, take care.
Get more information about this episode and listen to previous episodes at www.seventhkingdom.org. The Seventh Kingdom podcast is produced by Jason Lang and Stan James, with audio production by Charles Gamill. And this recording created by me, an unpaid computer program. Thank you for listening.